For listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from Burnaby Mountain, Burnaby, BC.
Trump is a morbid symptom. The real issue is the economic and political system of this country, and that's called capitalism. This is an issue of reorganizing society. Because right now, in the shift that is happening, where the world, that world that we knew is dying, and the new world is attempting to be born, is struggling to be born, we need midwives to foster, to nurture, to bring that new world into existence.
That's Claudia de la Cruz, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Claudia de la Cruz, Imagining a New World. Authoritarianism can't happen here, you say. Look around. Open your eyes. No one is safe. Dissent is being criminalized. People are being arrested without due process. When Trump was asked if it is his job to uphold the Constitution, he said, "I don't know." Claudia de la Cruz says Trump and his cabinet full of billionaires are waging an all-out war on our communities, from slashing thousands of jobs to massively defunding critical programs that many working-class people rely on to survive. At this critical moment, she says, we can't simply lay down and allow his administration to roll back all the rights that our people's movements have won. Now is the time to organize our communities and stand up to fight back. Unquote. In these dark times, we cannot be bystanders. We must resist and imagine and create a new world where peace, equality, dignity, and justice are the norm. Our guest today is Claudia de la Cruz. She's an educator and community organizer. For nearly 30 years, she's worked on building people power locally, nationally, and internationally. In 2024, she ran for President of the United States, representing the Party of Socialism and Liberation. She's the Executive Director of IFCO, the Interreligious Foundation for Community Organization. She spoke in May 2025 in Boulder as part of her Fighting the Billionaire Coup, We Won't Back Down tour. And now, Claudia de la Cruz.
We are experiencing an unprecedented time, right? And I would dare say that most of us who are above the age of 40 have probably not seen a moment like this before. And it's important to say that and call it, because the fact that we are living these unprecedented times, which are historical times of repression, historical times of oppression, also call for historical times of resistance. They call for historical times of creativity and utilizing everything and anything we know to be able to fight back, and not only fight for our future, but fight for our now, because things are happening very rapidly. I think it's important for us to let our people know that we cannot be bystanders. We can't afford to be bystanders. We cannot afford to be apathetic. We cannot afford to become cynicist. We cannot afford to lose hope, because any single right that we lose at this moment, we will not get tomorrow. What we are experiencing is something that Gramsci spoke about. I am a true fan of Gramsci. Antonio Gramsci was an Italian communist. He was a theorist, but he's also a prisoner. He was a political prisoner. They imprisoned him in a moment of fascism, a moment in which people voted in fascism. A lot of the peasantry, a lot of working class people voted in fascism. And his deep question was, why do people act against their interest? Why is it that working class people act against their interest and advance the interests of those who are our class enemies? He asked himself, why is it so hard to build an alliance and a relationship between those who are organizing rural areas and those who are organizing in the urban setting. He asked many questions. And there was something very key, or at least to me, that I appreciate from his writing, and is the key role of cultural conditioning and how cultural conditioning is connected to the economic base, meaning the economy that runs society. And that's how we understand a lot of things. In his analysis, he said something that I think is very relevant to today. He said, "The old world is dying, and the new world is struggling to be born. And in the interim, morbid symptoms will arise." We need to think as Trump as a morbid symptom. And I'm being very serious about that. And why do I say we need to think of Trump as a morbid symptom? Because he is not the illness. The illness is the economic and political system that we know as capitalism. An economic system that has failed not only the people in this country, but people across the globe. In this world that is dying, we need to acknowledge that there has been many moments in history in which capitalism has been in crises. And in every one of those moments, there has been an attempt from the ruling class, from the capitalists, to save capitalism. We need to ask ourselves, why Trump and why now? I know a lot of people, I know I do it all the time. When I hear that man speak, I clown him because there's nothing else to do, right? Like, I clown him. I say, this is disturbing, but like, this is almost like comedic. This is, you know, and there's so many ways of characterizing it in a way that we could potentially dismiss just how threatening he is, not only to us, but to the world. And again, he's a symptom. He is something that the capitalist system, the economic system in which we live, has birthed. So the narrative that white poor people are the reason he's there is a lie. The narrative that it was Black and Latino voters that voted him in is a lie. Let's talk about the democratic process in this country. The Electoral College is who decides who the president is going to be. So let's start there. This is not one person, one vote. Okay? We live in a society where democracy is good for those who have money. It's a dollar democracy. It's not a democracy of the people. Therefore, the people, the working class people of this country, are not to be blamed by the morbid symptom that is Trump. Trump is a result, again, of a system that is a failed system and that has both Democrats and Republicans to blame. The Democratic Party has been in office for many times in the last 30 years. People talk about Project 2025 as it was something that was born last year during the campaign trail. And that's a lie. Project 2025, if you pick it up and you read it, is something that has been in development since the 1980s, since Reagan. A lot of presidents and administrations have come in and out, Democrats too. And so they are also complicit in our having to deal with their problem, which is Trump. And so we need to be really clear that the conditions have been created to birth someone like Trump to become the president of the United States and engage in the billionaire coup that he's engaging in now, which is an overt, a very open war against working class people. That is what we are experiencing. He has been really clear about what their agenda is, but he is doing it in a way that is shock and awe. He's doing it rapidly, forcefully, to confuse, to isolate, to demoralize, to disintegrate any possibility for us of thinking that there could be another way. This is creating a deeper crisis in every human being in the United States. People are feeling scared. People are feeling, again, like this is the end of the world. And we need to remember that capitalists thrive on that. The economic system, those billionaires that want to keep us down, thrive on chaos so that we don't have an opportunity to think clearly or even attempt coming together, because every sector of the working class is being hit. So everyone is concerned about how they're being hit. And we need to keep in mind that symptoms are momentary. If you have an illness, you experience the symptom, and they might come back again and again and again and again if you don't treat it at the root. So this problem is not about changing who's going to oppress us next. It's not about Democrats or Republicans. This is about the deep issue of capitalism in this country, and I want us to get it. Dealing with an economic system that is a failed system, that is of the old world. What do I mean of the old world? This is going to sound like a history lesson, and some of you may know this, and if I am wrong, you can fact check me, because I like fact checks. So post-World War II, 1945, the United States presents itself internationally as the soft power, in quotation marks, because they were still doing a lot of aggressive, violent ways and things to be able to dominate. A lot of dictatorships, for example, that the United States was backing, supporting, that gave birth to oligarchs in this continent. One example was 1954 in Guatemala. You know, you place a dictator, you make the dictator your friend, you fund the dictator and whatever it is that they do, torturing people, disappearing people, destroying any type of opponent. And then you build a class within that country that is going to become your junior partner and that's going to allow you to utilize, extract, you know, labor, resources, you name it. And that model expanded. It went from Guatemala to Chile to where I'm from, the Dominican Republic, to Cuba, to Venezuela. I mean, if you look at the CIA's greatest hits, every country that you could potentially think of has been intervened by the United States somehow, either politically, economically, or militarily. And so they became, utilizing those methods, the hegemon of the world, economically, politically, and militarily. They created NATO as an alliance to sell, in some ways, security to oligarchs from European countries, telling them we will be your partners and we will keep you safe from those communists. And so NATO was created. The IMF was created. And the World Bank was created as a way of making the global South into a sweatshop and nations that would become slaved by debt to the United States. Are you following me? Even when we talk about the question of Palestine, there is a formation in 1948 of what we know now as a colonial state of Israel. And Israel's role in the Middle East has been and will be to do exactly what NATO has done in Europe, what AFRICOM has done in Africa, what the Southern Command has done in these territories. And so there was the establishment of a military force, of an economic force, of a political force through the UN. Everyone has a vote, but who has the right to veto? Dominance in all sorts of ways. Now the world is shifting. We are in a new stage where there are new economies that are arising. Economies that are becoming powerful and are building relationships with other nations in another way in the global South. Now you see China building relationships with other countries in Asia, with countries in the Americas, with countries in Europe. India is growing economically too. Russia is growing economically too. Brazil is growing economically too. The concept and model of a dependency model is becoming obsolete. Nation states are actually building themselves. The world is shifting. And the United States is being left behind. And so if economically, if politically, you are being isolated as the United States hegemon of the world, as the big superpower, the best person for the job is Trump. Because he will be forceful, because he will be a bully, because he will do things that people will consider to be erratic and chaotic and nonsensical. And he is okay going down in history with all those titles if it means saving capitalism. Are you following me? This is critical for us to understand. Because the more we engage in a process of clowning him without being critical about what's actually happening, we are devaluing what this shift means to us and the world. Trump is attempting to save U.S. imperialism internationally by suffocating economies, by bending the will of other nations to his will, to his interests, which are the interests of the billionaire class of the United States. But he does not understand that these nations have experienced capitalism and neoliberalism and U.S. imperialism enough to know that that's not the route. To know that there is a possibility of a multipolar world. And that is a proposal from the Global South. The Global South no longer wants to be the sweatshop of the United States. The Global South no longer wants to be the slaves via debt. The Global South wants a dignified life. And so they're aligning themselves. What's happening in Burkina Faso and the Sahel region? Saying, well, we're going to negotiate, but we're going to negotiate from a place of dignity because our people deserve dignity. Our people deserve to live and thrive. And so we're going to come from a place that has a backbone. That is something admirable and something that the United States as an imperialist force did not expect and does not like. Because every time there has been resistance that has been birthed anywhere in the world, the United States has attempted or has toppled it. And that's the only way that we can actually make reasoning of the amount of immigrants that have come into this country. Because they come here following the traces of the things that have been stolen from them. They don't come here because they one day woke up and scrubbed their belly and said, I want to cross borders. That's not how it works. And a lot of the immigrant families that come into this country with the idea of working, building some sort of wealth, and going back to their homeland. But the United States, through imperialism, does not make that viable. And we need to be really clear about that. That relationship that was one of violence, of brutality, of extraction, is coming to an end across the globe. And people are willing to sacrifice. When China says to the United States, we're okay with your tariffs. That's okay. And unless you cut the tariff game and treat us with respect and speak with us as if we are people of dignity, we are not willing to go to the negotiating table with you. That's dignity. That is dignity. That's nothing more than that. But the United States government, not the people, the government administrations of the United States do not understand dignity because they thrive on crushing the dignity of people. Trump is the person for the job in this time. He's not the ideologue. He is not the intellect. He's not the person crafting the plan. Believe me, he is not. But he will deliver the performance. Because that is Trump. I don't know how many of you used to watch WWE. I never did. My mom didn't allow that. But he is in the WWE Hall of Fame. He is a performer. I'm from New York. We know it. So I think it's very important for us to, again, know who we're dealing with and what he is capable of, because he truly, really wants to go down in history as a king. And he's utilized bending the knee so much that I lost count. And the way for him to bend people's knee to him and his administration of billionaires is through force. How does that shift from the old world to the new world look in the United States? It looks like shifting the way of governance. It's doing away with everything and anything that the people have won historically in this country. Not that the Democrats have handed to us. What people have won. We have won. Our movements have won that. We've made demands. We've forced the hand of those in political power to do what they need to do to recognize us as human beings. They haven't just benevolently handed to us those rights. And so it's important to remember that as well. Everything that we have achieved historically as a people, he's chipping away. And he's testing the waters. And the reason that I'm saying he's testing the waters is because he will go as far as we allow him to. We have to recognize our power. He will go as far as he is allowed to go. Because everything that he is doing is unconstitutional. Everything that he is doing is outside the law. These immigration raids without any type of due process, these deportations, that's illegal. He can't do that. And what he is doing also is letting us know that if you oppose, striking through fear, right? If you oppose, you'll go to jail. That judge. She had nothing to do with that person walking out of court. This person went through their proceeding and this person was granted freedom and the person left. And then she was held in contempt because the person walked out and ICE couldn't get him. And so it is, again, we need to make sense of this in this way. They are giving us alarms. They are giving us ways in which we could understand that if you oppose, they will repress. Or how do we understand the encampments and the persecution of students that have legal status? Mahmoud Khalil had a green card. He's married to a U.S. citizen. He wasn't doing anything. And undercover ICE agents came and abducted him. And he is one of many. They are breaking into houses of students that are U.S. citizens even and taking away computers and taking away phones. This is letting us know that no one is safe. And if we allow him to create categories of people that are worth saving and those that are not saving, that means that we are normalizing a terrorist governance over us. That is what's happening. And we need to be really clear about that. Bubbles burst. The middle class is almost non-existent in this country. People that are holding on to the idea, well, I'm not being bothered and I am assured of a home and I am assured of, you know, paycheck and I have my retirement plan. All good. Well, let me tell you, baby, it is estimated that almost 300,000 federal workers are going to be laid off. There are people in this town that are expected to be laid off next week. And that is happening all across. So we need to be really clear that these bubbles of so-called safety that we thought we had, we don't have. And we don't have it as working class people because we don't have control of the economy. We don't have control of the political system in this country. Again, the democracy we know is a democracy that is a dollar democracy. So we cannot just simply protect the civil rights that we have. We need to work towards building an actual popular democracy in this country. We need to work towards building economic democracy in this country, where workers who produce all the wealth have a level of control in deciding how that wealth is going to be utilized. How is it that we have someone like Elon Musk, who was not elected, running Doge or running anything in this country? Access, complete access to the Oval Office. Parading himself as if he is the president of the United States. That is crazy. And they are attempting to normalize that. And let me remind you, they're not the majority. They're building an echo chamber of a small group of people. I mean, I don't know if you all saw what happened in the newsroom, where they basically outed everyone they consider to be liberal or progressive out of the press room. And everyone that was sitting there commemorating the 100 days was right wing. And they were praising how beautiful the press secretary was and how eloquent she is. We all have different opinions, and that's okay. And, you know, how great it is to go into the White House and see all the children of all the young people that are now working there, who are deciding the lives of millions of people, kids, who also invest in the companies that they're deregulizing. It's crazy, but it's happening. And they will go as far as we allow them to go, because ultimately, we as workers have a power that we have yet to tap into. We have yet to tap into that power. I want to remind us of history. In the 1920s, during the Red Scare, there was a lot of work that was being done that actually kind of sipped itself to the Great Depression, the times of the Great Depression, that forced the hand of Roosevelt to put forth the New Deal. People always talk about him as this great president, but he wasn't as great as we think. He was a capitalist trying to save capitalism and save it from potential revolt from the people. People were organizing around labor. People were organizing around unemployment. There were unions of people who were unemployed. There were people who were organizing around tenant rights. And in all these organizing processes during the decades of the 20s and 30s, there were communists who were organizing. That's why they hit the communists so hard, because that was a potential opposition to the capitalist class. And if Roosevelt wouldn't have done that, capitalism wouldn't have been saved, because people were that tired of not having access to the most basic things. We should really study that moment in history. There's a lot of parallels. We need to think about the civil rights movement, the sit-ins, the freedom rights. A lot of people lost their lives. A lot of people lost their jobs. A lot of people were jailed. A lot of people were hosed down. It took sacrifice. But it was because of mass movement that Jim Crow was defeated. They didn't give us that. They didn't give us the Civil Rights Act. People fought for that. The same thing happened during the Vietnam War. I went to Columbia University. I saw those gates, and those gates to me were a reminder of the young people of 1968 that did the encampments. And the reason they put those gates up were to separate community from the student body, so that the student body didn't have to be in conversation or in exchange with the community that Columbia displaced. And so we need to be conscious that we have a legacy and a history of people who have fought back every time these capitalists have attempted to save capitalism. Every time there's a crisis, there's a war. Every time. And we need to ask ourselves why. War is profitable. Very profitable. Not for the people. It's miserable for the people in the United States and for the people across the seas. Miserable, violent, brutal. And just because we don't see actual bombs exploding here, they actually do. Because every dollar that is put in the hands of those who are waging war against Palestinian babies, against people in Sudan, against people in Haiti, against people anywhere around the world, are dollars that are being taken away from infrastructure.